different view of what we were speaking about last week. So again, to make sure that I tell you guys again, you can download these files for free. Tell your friends about it so they can download these files also. Sarai's abortion study is also on there for those of you that were interested. You can go on there and download it. Those are MP3, so they're small. You can put them on your iPod. And we designed them so that when you download them, you can actually get the titles, and not only the titles, but the actual cover art. So when you, you know, when you get it on your iPods, you get, you know, I like, how many of you guys have iPods? I like having the cover art on there, you know, for whatever reason. I hate it when that little music symbol sounds. It's like I'm missing something. I have the song, but I'm missing something. So, all right, so we're going to talk tonight about free thinkers or deniers of God and truth. That's the question that we're asking. And we're going to go in depth into the realm of disbelief, disillusion, evil, deceit, and plain lies. Now, let's go into what we spoke about last week. But before we do that, I want to read this to you guys because this is our foundational verse. This is the verse that we're going to use as to lay the groundwork for our study for tonight. And we did it also last week. Now, it says in Psalms, the 14th Psalm, verses 1 through 5, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, they have done abominable works, there is none that doeth good. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. They were all gone aside, they altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one." So automatically, if you have this mentality that people are generally good, these three verses strike down that idea. The Bible tells us that no one is good. There was a young man that approaches Jesus in the New Testament, in the Gospels, and he says, "Oh, good teacher, good rabbi." And he says, "Why are you calling me good?" This is Jesus speaking. This is God. And he says, there's only one good. That's God. Okay, so even in his humility, we see that Jesus is therefore exalting God in that verse. So we see that Jesus is just basically founding himself on these verses here. They are all gone aside. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. "Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread, and call not upon the Lord? There were they in great fear, for God is in the generation of the righteous." Now, I use these verses because I want you to understand that at first glance, atheists want to make you believe that they're generous, fun-loving people that have done everything in life that you can imagine. They do everything that you can only imagine. They travel. They say they have a lot of money, and therefore they experience life, and they're not tied down by religiosity, right? But I want you guys to notice in verse 4 that it says, "Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread, and call not upon the Lord." These are people that, generally speaking, will do everything they can to reach out to Christians. Now, we already said last week that they generally say that they are anti-religion across the board, anti-Islam, anti-Hinduism, Buddhism, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that's long for Mormon, Christians. But their main attack, and we discovered that last week, is against Christians. And tonight I want you guys to hear some of their main proponents say this. Now, to get in depth in more into what we were talking about last week, we examined and exposed how atheists, or they're also called free thinkers nowadays, their belief system has its roots in Darwinism, okay? And how the link has caused genocide and statist control. We're even going to see a little bit more of that today. What do you mean, Gio, by genocide and statist control? Well, we discovered that Darwinism basically gave birth to the Hitlers, the Mussolinis, the Stalins, the Fidel Castros, the Che Guevaras of life, the Hugo Chavezes. That this belief system, while they might not express it openly, it did give birth to these types of people. And therefore, the amount of atheist countries that have killed dozens upon thousands upon millions of people are great. Last week, we spoke about Hitler. The main number that most people know is that he killed more than 5 million Jews, right? But the problem is that out of that number, we always seem to exclude Germans, and everyone else that was around, or the countries that were around Germany. I mean, Hitler wanted absolute control of the whole world, ladies and gentlemen. So it wasn't just Jews that he killed. He killed even Germans that didn't fit the Uberman description. If you were weak, feeble, like he called it, you were down for the count. Okay? So remember to keep that in mind. So even though atheists will tell you generally that Christians are the ones that, or religion is the one that has caused the most amount of deaths. And we spoke last week, for example, about the Crusades. How it is that teachers, professors, they always seem to jumble us in there with, with the Catholics. And I hate that description because how many of you guys are Catholics here? Okay. You're a Catholic? I'll explain myself. Catholics tend to believe otherwise than actual Christians do. We Christians believe that Jesus is the propitiation for our sins, He alone. Catholics believe that Mary has a role in it. So generally, if you go to the Bible and you really search out what's in there, you will see that Jesus, like He said, I am the only way, the truth, and the life. No one can go to the Father except through Me. But Mary says, or the Catholics say, no, you got to go through Mary first. As a matter of fact, she intercedes for us. And she intercedes for us and then goes to Jesus. And that's not what the Bible says. And you'll find many contradictions within the Catholic Bible, including, how many of you guys know what the Apocrypha is? How many of you guys know that? You guys don't know what the Apocrypha is? One person. What is the Apocrypha? That's partly true. The Apocrypha are books that are non-canonical books. The basic definition would be non-canonical books that do not agree with the central doctrine of salvation in the Bible. Therefore, they're extra historical writing. So that's about right, Salvador. And the Catholics have this stuff in there. And it's funny because you even hear priests. There was a famous priest here locally. He had been working here since the 70s. He would recite Psalms. And he would recite, eyes they have and they don't see. Right? So on and so forth, talking about idols. And yet, what's the first thing that Catholics do? They have idols in their homes. We're talking about non-moving sculptures that don't have any reasoning, nothing. They're stuck there instead of going to Jesus, who died for our sins and resurrected on the third day. So we understand that. Now, we also expose the myths about evolutionary theory, explaining man's origins and how morals are created by God. The reason I put this in quotations, ladies and gentlemen, is because God is good. It's not that He created morals. Is that we understand that we get morals, we get values, we get principles, love for each other from God. Remember that we're all a fallen race. So therefore, what happens? We have to go to God so that He renews our mind and implants in us what? Good. How many of you guys, from the moment you were kids already, I don't want you guys to ever think that because we're Christians, God doesn't allow you to think for yourself. As a matter of fact, dare I say, I want you to question everything that you read about in the Bible. Why? Not in the base of trying to find erroneous passages, stories, but in the sense of why. Why did God do this? Right? Some people say, well, I'm afraid I'm going to blaspheme. You're not going to blaspheme. As a matter of fact, this week I did some amazing studies, and you guys would be surprised to find out how atheists are so wrong in some of the just the small passages that you guys see that they take stuff out of context. And if you do historical studies, you start to understand there's a reasoning behind all of this. Let me ask you guys a question. How many of you guys know what Pharaoh did in order to try to kind of curb the growth of the Jews? What did he do? Male firstborn. He even told the those that were helping out the Jewish women to give birth, you see the boy? But it says that God honored them because they said, we're not going to do that, right? I heard an atheist this week say, no, God commanded Pharaoh. Look up the twist, how they twisted. God commanded Pharaoh to kill all of the Jews' firstborn male child. And I said to myself, let me see if I understand this straight. They're His people, and He's telling Pharaoh to kill the firstborn. Right. Got it. They've never read the Bible. And we'll get into how they are regurgitators of what each and every other one says. Now, many atheists in speeches, interviews, and books constantly attempt to discredit biblical truths and historicity. Here are key points of their arguments and lies. Now, I want you guys, before we get into this, to listen to Richard Dawkins. Remember that I showed you a picture? He was on the bottom left side of our screen. He is one of the foremost atheist gospel preachers, if you want to call it that. Okay? In his book, The God Delusion, this is the intro that he writes. Listen to what he thinks about God, okay? Have a close listen.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
How long did it take him to write that phrase? You see what I'm saying, that they're non-breathers? I didn't hear him take a break there. Yeah, he just tries to use, exactly. So if you guys notice all of the words, guys, notice, I want you to notice one key point. If you guys are going to learn one thing from this series, learn this. Atheists are great at convoluting the issue. I mean, you would have to go one by one in each word to try to defend, if you want to use that word, defend the gospel. Infanticidal? What did he mean by that? That God is just kills children for the heck of it? I mean, think about it. Genocidal, egomaniacal. I mean, you get into some of the words that he calls God, and you're like, now I want you to notice the key phrase here, because we're going to touch upon this later. Did you notice how he said the God of the Old Testament? Yeah. Atheists never touch Jesus. Rarely. Atheists rarely ever touch Jesus. And we'll get into that. Now, so that was Richard Dawkins, and from his book, The God Delusion. That clip was taken from Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, which I highly recommend. It's a movie. Okay, let's talk about some key points here that atheists love to talk about. They say God is a killer. Okay. For example, if you guys will notice here, how many of you guys have heard about the Midianites? Midianites? Okay, good. And how about the 42 children killed by she-bears? How many of you guys heard of that story in the Bible? Never? She-bear. A she-bear. A female bear. I'm glad we got that out of the way. All right. And slavery. Now, this is one I've always had a question about slavery. I've always asked myself, why did God allow slavery? Have you guys ever asked yourself that? Because God never said no more slavery during the Old Testament. So that has to be answered. Now, understand that atheists, their attempts, their what they have inside is to try to discredit the Bible. This is why they ask these questions. They don't ask it in order to arrive at a proper conclusion. They won't accept proper conclusions. They won't say, oh, I understand. No, they'll say, it doesn't make sense to me. So we, on the other hand, we look at the Bible objectively, ladies and gentlemen. It's important to look at these things objectively. Now, let's go over some of these. I want you guys, when you guys get home, to study about the Midianites. Atheists will say, oh, God is a ruthless killer. God commanded that he kill the poor Midianites and the Philistines and the Amalekites, and the list goes on and on and on. How many of you guys have heard of the land called Canaan? Okay, for those of you that have studied the Bible, Canaan is modern day... No. Canaan is modern day Israel. Now, we see in Genesis that God says, I will give you the land of the Canaanites. And in this land, there were a bunch of different tribes and people, you know, inhabiting. We got the Canaanites, the Hittites. We got all these different people inhabiting this land. And he says, but I will not give you this land yet because the evil of these people has not been fulfilled, has not come to fruition yet. In other words, God already foresaw that these people were going to be tribal, to use the best word. And he said, once they get to that point, then we'll take over and this will be your land. Right? Now, there's these people here, and I hate it when atheists use the Midianites to try to argue that that God is into killing people for the heck of it. They tell you, oh, God commanded Israel kill the Midianites. And that was unjustified. There was no reason to kill the Midianites. When you guys get home, do your research. And you guys will find that the Midianites had the Jews living out of caves. They had the Jews living out of caves. And they were caves, literal caves. And they were oppressing the Jews for a very, very long time. And it got to a point where God said, enough. And he says, you're going to get up and you're going to kill these guys. You're going to kill these bastards. Forgive my expression. Now, let me ask you a question. If you were to ask an atheist, if somebody was oppressing your family and living out of a cave, wouldn't you be justified in going and rising up against those people? They would say, Of course, but God isn't justified. So where's the difference? You see what I'm saying? Simple arguments like that will bring down an atheist argument. So why is God unjustified in asking Israel and telling Israel to go after the Midianites when the Midianites had these people living out of caves? Ladies and gentlemen, living out of caves is not fun. Think about the conditions. Think about that for a second. Let's talk about the Amalekites. How many of you guys heard about the Amalekites? In the middle of the desert, we find that these people come out of nowhere and start attacking Moses and Israel. And what happened? The hills have eyes, right? Out of nowhere. And atheists say, oh God, he told these guys to kill the Amalekites. Poor Amalekites, they're just... So let me ask you a question. Somebody that just rises up against your country just for the heck of it, you're unjustified to go and defend yourself? You see the contradictions? See what I'm saying? So those are some of the things where they say, oh, God is a killer. Now, this is a nice one. I love this one. 2 Kings chapter 2. Let's go there for a second. 2 Kings chapter 2. 2 Kings chapter 2. I want somebody to read. Let me tell you where the verse is found. This is during the minute. I'm going to get there now. Chapter 2. 2 Kings chapter 2. Now, I want you guys to take a really good look at this passage. Chapter 2, verse, let me make sure, let's see where to start from. Let's go, because this is talking about Elijah here. So let's go to verse 23, and look what happens. Somebody read verse 23 and 24 and 25. Who has it? Who has it?
No, I don't. I don't have it.
Who has it? Somebody's going to read it. Juan, read it. Pay attention, guys. Think about this for a second. There's 42, maybe more. We don't know the exact number. We just know that the female bears mauled. You know that the word there in Hebrew means to tear in half? These two, think about this for a second. I laugh. Two female bears tearing apart 42 people. And the word there that Hebrew uses is cut in half. That must have not been pretty. That must have been a lot of gore. If you want a horror movie, there's your horror movie. You would call it 2 Kings 2, 23 and 24. That would be your next horror film. Bears are on the loose and they're going to maul you in half, you know? Okay? Now, some of you are probably thinking, why did God allow this? Right? Children. Little children? Because little youth. There's something interesting there. You see, this is where studies come in hand. How many of you understand that when you're reading a book of antiquity, you must go back to that culture to understand what the writings were about and how they use that writing, right? When you go to another culture, sometimes, how many of you guys have had difficulty? How many of you guys are Hispanics? Raise your hand. How many of you guys have heard someone say a word that in your country is a bad word, but to them it's not? Culture differences, right? Now, we're talking about simple culture differences. Think about decades and centuries, thousands of years apart. Remember that the Bible was finished compiled more than 2,000 years ago. Where? In Israel and in different parts of Asia Minor. This is a different culture, a different time, right? And this is the Old Testament, which is even older, okay? When you look at the word little children, the word for children there is na'ar, na'ar. How do you spell that? N-A-apostrophe-A-R. Do you know that that word is used a ton of times in the Bible? And it's actually speaking about 20-year-olds. At first, I'm not joking. You might think I'm joking. Look it up. Solomon, when God is giving him the kingdom of his father David, he says, but Lord, I am a little child. You think by reading that, it's like, man, Solomon was 6 years old when he was a king. That's a young age. That's really young. It is said and historically proven that Solomon was close to his 20s already. And you ask yourself, why do Jews call themselves little children at the age of 20? That was their culture. So when you first read this passage, you say, oh my God, God told, you know, Elijah cursed these kids. And all of a sudden, you see that these she-bears come out and start mauling them. What kind of God is that? These are 20-year-old men coming out. And let me ask you a question. What were they doing mocking the prophet of God anyways? Think about it for a second. And the Bible, nowhere does it say that God actually sent the bears. Nowhere does it say in the Bible that God actually sent the bears. Yes, Elijah cursed them, but it doesn't tell you what the curse was caused, because if not, the Bible would have been very explicit. And the curse was that the bears tore apart the kids, right? Or the children, the little children, or the 20-year-olds. But it doesn't say that. So there's a lot of atheists read into all this stuff and present it to you in a different way where it makes God look evil. Where when you study it, you say, wait a minute. Okay, all right. So let's talk about the issue of slavery. How many of you guys have ever asked yourself, why doesn't God condemn slavery? Have you guys ever, I've asked myself that. I said, man, but why is it that? Very important. How many of you guys have heard of the year of Jubilee? The year of Jubilee. You guys don't read your Bibles. That's why you guys have never heard of it. The year of Jubilee. Jubilee. Okay? Every X amount of years. Okay, God tells the Israelites, you're going to take 6 years and you're going to reap, you're going to sow, right? And on the seventh year, you will do nothing to the land, right? We find this in Exodus. You will do nothing to the land. You will let the poor people and the beasts of the field eat. The seventh year, you will leave the land alone. You will not do anything to it. But what happens? Every X amount of years, all debts were to be paid. In other words, you can actually sell yourself to a person for service if you were destitute, if you were needing a home, if you were needing anything. You can actually sell yourself to a person to actually service that person. When we think about slavery, ladies and gentlemen, we think about the worst case scenario, like in, you know, here in America, when we had the blacks here as slaves. Get to work, you know, that kind of thing, the worst kind of slavery possible. But imagine this, when you sold yourself off for slavery, it meant that you already had a master, you had someone that controlled you. But God says, read it again in Exodus, you will not mistreat your slave. In other words, you're going to treat him like one of your household. So in atheist minds, they think, oh, a slave is a person that, you know, they're constantly beating up on and they're telling you better do this or I'm going to beat the crap out of you, you know, that kind of thing. No. A lot of these people, they sold themselves off. A lot of their parents sold their young girls off. Honest to God. But it got to a point where these situations, that in the year of Jubilee, all debts would be paid, and that person could literally go free from that service period, from that contract that they put themselves over. So it wasn't a situation where there was a mistreatment of these people. They were more a serviced situation where they would sell themselves off to families for what? For what reason? So they can have, you know, to live. Exactly. A lot, guys, you have, huh? Guys, exactly. It's service. That's all you're doing. So atheists, they paint this picture to you that when you're talking about slavery, it's a situation where it's, you know, the master's beating down on you day and night. That's not the case. Guys, remember something. A lot of the owners of these fields and that had slaves, they themselves worked. They themselves worked the field. They just hired help. A lot of them didn't. We understand that a lot of them had a lot of money and they had other people running their affairs for them. But it doesn't mean that these people, God did not make these people responsible for their slaves. So that, what happens? So that these people are treated like one with the family. As a matter of fact, God even says, and read it in Exodus, that if this person says, you know, I can't get away from my owner, he would be sold to him for life. But it's on the condition of the slave giving himself over to the owner. Why would the slave want to do that? Think about that for a second. Huh? Maybe necessity. Maybe he just loves his owner. And some people say, dude, I can't understand that. But why did God write about it? Why did Moses write about it? Think about it. We live in this country where there are no slaves. We understand that for us, slavery is a bad issue because we understand the abuses of slavery, right? and everyone is free and whatnot. But to a lot of these people that were slaves, they basically said, you know, this is what I do. My, guess so. I mean, you really think about it. And your owner, if your owner is treating you well, he's giving you house, he's giving you food, he's treating your family well. Think about it. I mean, now, think about it. We got to. Now, here's the interesting part. Some people say, oh, wait a minute. Did you know that if the year of Jubilee came and you had kids under your owner's tenure, those kids were his? Some people say, whoa, that's a tough one. I know that's a tough one. The owner can let him go, but that's what God mandated. Some people say, whoa, wait a minute, Gio, that's a tough one. Think about it. If your master has been giving you everything for X amount of time, he's been feeding your kids for you, don't you think it's kind of fair? Yeah, you might have given birth to them, but the master is taking care of your family. That's a tough pill to swallow. That's a tough pill to swallow if you really think about it. Say, oh, but you know, you see, that's why I don't get it, Gio. That's a tough one. Ladies and gentlemen, I've asked myself these questions. I had the same look when I first read that. I was like, you know, we live in a, it makes sense. But it doesn't look, if I am an owner of something and I'm paying for it and all of a sudden you're gonna take it away from me, think about it. I'm basically supporting that family. But the owner, I mean, it's tough for me. When you have a kid, I can understand, because when you have a kid like I do, it's a different situation. You're like, dang, man, it's like, that's my blood. But the owner can. That's my point. You're selling yourself off. Now, what happens in the New Testament? Even Paul, read the book to Philemon. He tells Onesimus, go back to your owner. And this is even in the New Testament. That's a serious question. But again, the thing that we focus most on is the abuses of slavery. Okay? I don't want to use this word, but we never focus on the benefits, some people say. Some people say, oh, you know, you don't want to focus on. I'm not saying it for that reason. That might shock you. But you think about it. If you've got an owner that treats you well, is taking care of your family because you can't, what have you got to lose? If he doesn't treat you right, then that's why in the New Testament, under the grace period, Paul says you can be free. This is grace. This is a grace period. Remember that we're talking about Old Testament. We're living in a new dispensation. This dispensation is better than what we find in the Old Testament. I'm not saying I want to go back there. Don't confuse me. I'm not saying that I want to go back to Old Testament times. I'm not saying that. I like this period. I like that Jesus died for my sins, and I like that I can be free, right? But I'm not going to get to the point where we're sidetracking here, but I'm not going to get to the point where the atheists, they basically try to convolute the issue and make God seem like an ogre when he isn't, right? Okay, now let's look at the contradictions. If you guys get a chance, go to 2 Samuel 24. You don't have to go there now. And 1 Chronicles 21. There are two different accounts or two different tellings of the same story. We see that God tells David, you will not take a census unless I tell you to. What is a census? Basically taking information about all of your people, numbering all your people, soldiers, this, that, and the other thing. We find in 2 Samuel 24 that it says God's anger was kindled against Israel, and God incited David to take a census. But yet in 1 Chronicles 21, it says that Satan incited David to do. So who was it? You say, whoa, wait a minute, there's a contradiction now. Let me explain. Most theologians say the following. James tells us that God is good, right? We understand that. And that he does not tempt anybody. Don't say, I was tempted of God, because God doesn't tempt anybody. So when you take both of these, and Job. Did you guys notice that God never told Satan, don't touch Job? What was it that God told Satan, don't touch his soul? But he allowed him to basically touch everything around him. Think about it. God does allow that. Who's Job?
No.
Uh-huh. So we understand that God doesn't tempt, but when you take these two, you know, passages and you put them together, you start to understand that it seems like God allowed Satan to tempt David into taking the census, and they paid severe penalties for doing that. when God didn't want him to take a census. So we'll get into that, the census and the numbers. So we'll move on. We only have a little bit of time. Now, I want you guys to notice that atheists are great at repeating what they hear, even though it is inaccurate. I've already given you guys a couple of instances where you guys have noticed that atheists, they love to repeat stuff that they hear from other atheists, like Richard Dawkins. And, oh, by the way, Christopher Hitchens, one of the most animate, anti-biblical, anti-Christian guys out there. He was diagnosed. No, he's another guy. The guy on the right-hand side on the first, yeah. He was just diagnosed with esophageal cancer. He's got a poor chance of living. But look at this. Check this out. They interviewed him on CNN. And they said, look, there are people that are praying for you. What do you say about that? Do you know what his answer was? There are people praying for me or that I die. What kind of a response is that? Obviously, he's so bitter in his heart that he couldn't even acknowledge that there are actual Christians praying for him to get better. And atheists, generally, they're not happy people. I know it because I've dealt with them. I've seen them. They're not happy people. These people, they hate God. They're always angry. They're always bitter. And you ask yourselves, why? Right? Bad situation. So, again, the end game is to attack God. If he doesn't exist, my question is, why do atheists even bother? If they don't believe God exists, why do they do seminars? Why do they attack God? Why do they attack the Bible? If it doesn't exist, leave us alone. Right? You notice that in fiction. If Richard Dawkins says that it's fiction, then why does he have such a... Why bother? And he himself has said, it's on YouTube, my war, my motivation is to bring down religion. Don't touch Christianity, though. I hate religion. I can't stand religion. I don't care about religion. What we understand that we have is a relationship with God. That's different. Religion is a set of systems that you live by in order to try to get into heaven. Right? I mean, let's look at Catholics, for example. They tell us, even though you're a good Catholic, you might end up in an imaginary place called purgatory, right? Watch it. And then, here's the great thing about it, guys. If your family has money and you're in purgatory, you got to pay the Catholic Church to get... So I can... Let me see if I get this straight. Michael, did that family pay for that guy to get out of purgatory and come into heaven? Did he pay the Catholic... Good, okay, bring him on up here. What? Ladies and gentlemen, when you look at the history of the Catholic Church, they're nothing but a money machine. No, these guys are, you don't touch the great pontiff. You don't touch him. Absolutely. Let's look at Pope Pius XII. Did you guys know that Pope Pius XII actually funded the Nazi party? Party. Let's get God a party, right? Did you know that Pope Pius XII actually funded and began with the Vatican's help, the Nazi party? You guys didn't know that, did you? Yeah. It's good that you guys know that. Now, I want you guys to listen to this. Remember last week how we were talking about how atheism, Darwinism, they have all come to, create totalitarianism, right? Hitler, Stalin. Atheists will blatantly tell you that their agendas, their intentions, what they are for the world. Here's just a sample of what the world would look like if atheists had their way. You're going to listen to a man called P.Z. Myers. He's a professor. And this is also from Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Listen to this very carefully. This is what an atheistic world would look like, a place without God. Okay?
Religion is an idea that gives some people comfort, and we don't want to take it away from them. It's like knitting. People like to knit. We're not going to take their knitting needles away. We're not going to take away their churches. But what we have to do is get it to a place where religion is treated at the level it should be treated. That is, something fun that people get together and do on the weekend and really doesn't affect their life as much as it has been so far. Greater science literacy, which is going to lead to the erosion of religion. And then we'll get this nice positive feedback mechanism going, where as religion slowly fades away, we get more and more science to replace it. And that will displace more and more religion, which will allow more and more science in. And we'll eventually get to that point where religion has taken that appropriate place as a side dish rather than the main course. And if you separate out the ethical message from religion, what have you got left? You got a bunch of fairy tales, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, we already know what an atheistic world looks like. You don't have to look anywhere. Let's look at Cuba, 90 miles away. Cuba's a hellhole. We don't have to look that far. Let's go back a couple of decades. Let's go to Germany, the Nazis. How was that like? We don't have to go that far away. Let's go to the Soviet Union. What was that like? I already told you guys about Stalin, how he basically withdrew food from the masses if they didn't want to participate in the Soviets' idea for living. We have heard stories of women going so hungry that they literally ate their children. When you take God out of the picture, you therefore take good out of the picture, right? Without God, ladies and gentlemen, there is lawlessness. That's what's happening in our country right now. You have lawlessness. And therefore, all sin begins to abound and grow and grow and grow and grow to the point where, I mean, what does that remind you of? What's happening in our own country? Under God? No, we got to get rid of that. But homosexual marriage? Sure, let it happen. Let them have their way. Did you know that insurance companies, they charge more for homosexuals than they do for regular human beings? Health insurance companies, you know why? Because they're more at risk to get deadly diseases. Right, so think about that for a second. People want to legalize marijuana. You know how many people have gotten a call from that their children died in a car accident because they finally smoked their first doobie? We've got a country that is basically, even Obama says, we are no longer a Christian nation. We are a secular nation. And I argue, no, Obama, we are not a secular nation. You are a secularist. Secular means is atheistic, in essence. Yes. Well, it wasn't passed. Remember that in 2008, Californians voted that marriage was to be defined between a man and a woman. That in essence, that piece of paper that the gays got was nothing but a piece of paper. Right. Now what happens? With that judge, which is an activist judge, he basically tries to make law from the bench, which isn't his job. Now he says, no, you're discriminating against homosexuals. You can tell. In the opinion that he wrote a 138-page opinion, and in it he says, I've seen how gay couples are as happy as heterosexual couples. What does that have to do with discrimination? Right? We're talking about what's right and wrong. The basic principles of black and white. Right? Where did I go wrong? Where did I miss the boat? You know? So, you guys heard P.Z. Myers. You guys know what the world is without God. A world without God, ladies and gentlemen, is a world that will do anything. Ladies and gentlemen, understand that sin has no bounds. Sin has no bounds. If you want to see what the world is going to be like without God, read the book of Revelation. Read it. The Bible tells us that if Jesus were to not return his second coming, there would be no flesh left alive. That's how much human beings would consume themselves. Wonder and think about that phrase for a second. Even Jesus, in the Gospels, he says the following, when the Son of Man returneth to earth, will he find any faith? Whoa. Millions upon, billions of people on the earth, and he will not find one person that has faith? That is a shocking, shocking statement. Think about a land without God. I mean, you don't have to go far. Look in your history books. Well, not Wikipedia, by the way, but in true history books, good history books. You guys can see what's in there. All right, now, what's the difference between atheist goals and totalitarianism? So the first myth is busted. God is good and the Bible is his divinely inspired word to humanity. A world full of atheism is a world without control and complete evil. Now, to finish off, let's touch on this second myth. Jesus is a madman and he isn't divine. That's what atheists say. No miracles have been proven. The Bible is a book of fairy tales, including the resurrection. Now, here's my phrase. Either Jesus is the Son of God or he's simply crazy. Guys, if you look at Jesus' claims objectively, you can only come at one of two conclusions. Arrive at one of two conclusions. Either Jesus was loco, or he is truly who he said he is, Let's examine the facts. Number one, John 17, 1 through 3 says, God the Father, I give you thanks that they may know you and Jesus, your Son, that they may know you, the one true God. If you look at John 8:58, what does it say? It says, before Abraham was, I am. What does that mean? If you understand Exodus, what was it that God said to Moses in the burning bush? Who do I tell the Israelites is sending me? I am that I am. It's God talking about God's infinite. He's infinite. He's forever. He doesn't live in time. He's perfect. And Jesus identified himself with God, one with God, as the Son of God, 8:52. Before Abraham was, I am. Now, again, we have to go in depth. Is this true? Is Jesus truly the Son of God? Well, the resurrection, everything we know, everything we believe, everything that we base our faith on is based on the resurrection. If Jesus did not resurrect, our faith is in vain, Paul says. Read 1 Corinthians 15:6. As a matter of fact, let's go there real quick. I want you guys to read it. It's an amazing, amazing verse, a couple of verses. 1 Corinthians 15:6. Let's read that. Somebody read 1 Corinthians 15:6, please. I want you guys to see that the resurrection isn't just a fairy tale. The Apostle Paul, go ahead, read it. Go ahead.
Me?
Yes, go ahead. Think about this for a second, ladies and gentlemen. The resurrection is historical fact. It says, the Apostle Paul says very clearly that he appeared to more than 500 witnesses after his resurrection. And during the time that Paul writes this epistle, it says some are still alive, some are still sleeping. So it wasn't that Jesus resurrected, and all of a sudden he says, I'm resurrected, and it's like, dude, I didn't see anything. Did you see it? But think about it. If you see Jesus crucified, right? And you see him die on that cross, and all of a sudden, days later, you see him walking. Either one of two things happen. Your pants become brown, right? Or you do a Thomas, and you say, I need to see him. I need to feel him. And Jesus appeared and said, here I am. Touch. And he said, whoa. I mean, literally, you go brown. I know I would have. I would have been like, honey, start the car. I'm seeing ghosts. Think about it. You've seen a man die on the cross, and 3 days later, you see him walking Jerusalem, and you're like, oh boy. How the heck did someone give me LSD in my drink? You know? Guys, more than 500 witnesses. And verses 12 through 19 says the following. But if you preach that Christ is resurrected from the dead, how do some say that there is no resurrection of the dead? Because if there is no resurrection of the dead, Christ didn't, you know, resurrect. And if Christ did not resurrect, our faith is in vain. Our preaching is in vain. So our faith is based on the fact that Jesus resurrected. The only way that Jesus is the Son of God is if he resurrected. Not only that, we have proof of the miracles that Jesus did in the Gospels. Last but not least, atheists rarely ever touch Jesus. Why? Because of the stuff he teaches, the stuff he taught. Love your neighbor. What did he say about enemies, ladies and gentlemen? You will love your enemy, right? I mean, you're going to go the extra distance. What happens? What did Jesus say? If they slap you on the cheek, what do? You kick them in the butt and then you turn your other one. No, he didn't say that. He says you turn the other cheek. Now, there's limits to that. My father preached on that on Sunday. I only have two cheeks. If you slap me twice on two cheeks, you're going to get it. That's just the way it works. I did my duty as a Christian. Now you're going to get a whooping. That's just the way it is. Look, people, Jesus was no sissy. I'm going to tell you that. Jesus was not a sissy. Some people think Jesus was a wimp. When everybody was selling stuff in the temple, I don't know if you guys ever heard about that little situation. What did he start doing? Jesus got so angry, he started toppling. We're talking about hundreds of people buying stuff. I mean, imagine this, the temple. Let's imagine this. Let's say that this is a temple, and there are hundreds of people shopping around. All of a sudden, you see this man, and he gets so angry, and he starts toppling over people's merchandise. Think about this for a second. Don't you think there would be a couple of people that would be really ticked off at him that would want to beat him up and kill him?
Yes.
Jesus is a man. I mean, he literally went and he toppled everything over. He said, my house will be called the house of prayer to all generations. Jesus is a man. And he had to be a man to go to the cross. I mean, that's no, there's nothing cooler than that. Some people say, hey, man, you're not fly because you weren't wearing your pants like this. You're not your fly. I tell them, dude, you're not fly because you don't believe in Jesus. To believe in Jesus is a real man. That's being a real man. Not wearing your pants halfway where everybody sees your butt crack. That's not being a real man, okay? That's not being a real man. Being a real man doesn't mean wearing a tight shirt and say, look at my pecs. And you've got man boobs. That doesn't work. You know, that's not being a real man. Being a real man is knowing that Jesus is your Lord and Savior. Okay? All right. Now, the Bible is the inspired word of God, people. The Bible is an historical compilation of selected letters from 39 authors spanning a period of about 3,000 years. I'm going to give you guys just simply four works because atheists love to question, oh, the Bible is not real. Constantine put this stuff together in the Council of Nicaea. Check it when you guys get home. Some people say that the New Testament, there's no original, so the New Testament is folly. Well, let's check this out. No one questions works of these authors. For example, Sophocles. He wrote between, his works were written between 496 to 406 before Christ. And the remaining amount of manuscripts that we have left, copies, are 100. And the first copies from the original documents were written 1,400 years later. Think about that. So how can you know that what people copied of Sophocles is actually the real deal? It was copied 1,400 years later. Plato, famous philosopher, atheist, 427 through 327 before Christ. Remaining amount of copies and originals, seven. Seven. And the first manuscripts, the first copies were written 1,200 years after the originals were written. And no one questions Plato's works. No one says, oh, I don't believe in Plato because his works were written 1,200 years afterwards. Nobody says that. Augustus, Caesar Augustus, these Gallic Wars, for example, 100 to 44 BC, 10 manuscripts remaining, 1,000 years after the originals were written. And last but not least, Tacitus, 100 BC, before Christ, he wrote his original manuscripts. There are 20 remaining originals, 1,000 years before the manuscripts, the copies were made. Check this out. The New Testament, it was written between 32 and 65 AD, more than 26,400 manuscripts remaining, copies. And we still have pieces of the originals. Did you know that if we were to recollect all the pieces that are left of the Old and New Testament from the originals, we would have everything, I think, except for 4 or 5 verses in the Bible? That's pretty cool. The first copies were written within a century, within 100 years to 300 years. Guys, I think 100 to 300 years is better than 1,000 and 1,400. I think I can rely on that. So this automatically debunks, and it's good for you guys to know this, this automatically debunks any atheist argument, oh, the Bible is not historically reliable. You know why? Because the Bible is, it's not real. It's fairy tales. If they want to believe that, that's good for them. So, in conclusion, myth number two is busted. Jesus is the divine Son of God because he said so. It's that simple. He said so. And because he is. And we find through the Bible that he is. If you can tell me otherwise, prove it to me. Guys, if Christianity were false, we wouldn't be Christians nowadays. Right? Christianity would have died a long, long time ago. Some people say, yeah, but wait a minute. Islam has remained a long time. Guys, remember how people convert you to Islam? They take out a sword, they put it to your neck and said, do you believe in Allah? Yes! And you're peeing in your pants. They basically have converted people by the Catholicism. Man, I hate to be attacking Catholics. I know that you say you're Catholic, but it's just the truth. I love the truth. Catholics, the reason Catholicism has stayed for so long, the Crusades. How many of you guys heard of the Crusades? Even Kirk Christian said, do you believe in Mother Mary? No. Shing, yes, I believe in Mother Mary. So, think about it. Even Joseph Smith from the Mormons, did you guys know how he died? Mormons will tell you that he died a martyr for the cause. Did you know that he actually sent people to try to break him out of prison? He was in there because they found out about his illegal workings behind the scenes, and not only that, because of his pedophilia. And right They knew people were coming to kill him, and he said, I have received divine inspiration. Tell the Mormons that they need to break me out of prison because Gabriel said so. That's so convenient. Right when he needed to be bust out of jail, and in jail, they opened the door and shot him dead. But Mormons will tell you nowadays, Mormons will tell you, oh, he died a martyr for the cause. Pretty bad martyr, if you ask me. All right, so every biblical retelling is historically accurate. So that's the second myth busted. So, guys, what do you do with all this information? Let me tell you guys what you guys do with this information. You guys store it in your hard drive, in your hard disk drive, HDD. Right? HDD. Say it with me, HDD. HDD. Not ADHD. Do you guys know what ADHDDD, whatever that means is? No. Attention, there's a thing called ADDHD, which is called Attention Deficit Disorder in High Definition. Let me tell you what that is. When people don't pay attention, it doesn't matter, but when those people do, it's amazing because it's in crystal clear high definition. Okay? That's a joke I heard a comedian say. So, guys, this stuff will be posted online. Your job, even though I know I've spoken a lot tonight, how can I post tonight? So, your job is the following. Your job is to go online and write this stuff down. How many of you guys have atheist friends? Acquaintances. Atheist acquaintances. Okay, good. So this is good to know so that just in case if anyone ever wants to shake your faith, you've got biblical backing. And I didn't even cover half of the stuff I wanted to cover. It's like, oh, dang, you've got more? Guys, there's a lot of evidence out there. This is just, I didn't give you 2%. But this is enough. Ladies and gentlemen, this is enough. All right, let's have a quick word of prayer.